Everything's bigger in Texas.
Texas is a land rich and plentiful, no doubt target rich, and it's proven to be one of the country's most sought out destinations to hunt wild game. This hunting culture is much more than that of only what an antler score can produce. It's a culture driven by family, values, and the trophy itself is embedded within the experience. This is the voice of Texas hunting. This is the Texas Trophy Hunters Podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Voice of Texas Hunting Podcast. My name is Cody. I'm with my good buddy Heath, and we are here to talk about all kinds of things from hunting to Thanksgiving traditions. We just finished up Thanksgiving, and it was awesome. And so I just wanted to take some time today to talk to Heath about these traditions and just have a little bit of a good time. But first, before we get into two traditions, I think we should give a rut report because you've hunted a few places.
Yeah.
And I've not.
What are you waiting on?
I don't know. I need to go to work.
Yeah, we have, man. We've been Midwest a little bit, and we're getting ready to hammer Texas hard late season.
Yeah.
And which is obviously always our favorite hunts of the year down there. Although we did have some good Midwest hunts this year.
Yeah.
Kansas had some cool encounters in Ohio, and obviously we've had some Arkansas hunts. And so it's been a killer season so far.
Yeah. Well, I've hunted some public ground here in Arkansas a few times and seen one buck. I've had a great success this year.
You feeling like your work is more productive than your hunting, huh?
Well, it has to be. Because if not, we have no business.
That's true.
So, yeah, I've had to make sure I had some projects that had deadlines done, and so I didn't get to go out as much yet.
Did you work over Thanksgiving?
A little, probably. I mean,
you always do.
I don't.
But you had some side work going on that was not media related.
That's true. I am a media guy. I am a mechanic.
Motor mechanic.
That's right.
I was trying to make a compound word there. Motor mechanic.
Motor mechanic.
You're a motor mechanic.
I like to figure out things, solve problems, all that kind of stuff. And I had an issue going on with my Jeep, and I was like, I'm going to call the shop and get this fixed. And the mechanic at the shop said, about 4 weeks, and you know me. I'm laying in bed, 12:30 one night, watching videos on how to fix this particular
YouTube
issue.
YouTube mechanic.
And true story, 12:30 that night, I decided I'm going to buy the parts, and I'm going to fix this tomorrow. And so I started trying to fix it at like 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. And before I went to bed, I was pretty much down to the engine block.
Cody sends me a picture.
In my Jeep.
Cody sends me a picture. Just
the only
for a,
vehicle I have to
just
drive.
For a visual of car parts that look like he had thrown up in the driveway or something. There's like a block and parts everywhere. And I literally said, you're crazy. There's no way I'd tackle that.
Yeah, it just kept getting further and further and further. I mean, at one point, I could have fit two small children down in the engine compartment or engine bay or whatever. But I'm happy to report, Heath, that I have driven my...
Since then.
Yeah, since then, I have been able to drive my Jeep.
You did. I pulled up to the office today, and I thought, son of a gun, he got it going. Not that I was shocked, but I was a little surprised that you had it going this quick.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. It's a good mechanic service right there, baby. So I don't think that's going to become a tradition for me over the Thanksgiving break. I'm hoping that I can, next Thanksgiving break, I can hunt more instead of fixed vehicles.
I think that's a much more enjoyable tradition.
Yeah.
To follow up Thanksgiving with a hunt.
Yeah.
I actually had several great hunts on Black Friday.
Yeah, my intention was to kill a deer on Black Friday, but well.
Didn't happen. I love Black Friday because all the girls want to go shop,
yeah,
and that's the last thing I want to do. And so I like spending time on the farm.
You don't like going to the stores
negative.
And perusing through all of the products?
I don't do that during a normal year, let alone on Black Friday.
Yeah, it's a whole nother level on Black Friday.
Yeah, people fighting stuff in there. Yeah. And
I will say the last few years have been, I've enjoyed it personally because I'm a family guy, you know, like all of our team at Trophy Hunters, we believe in the value of family. And
yeah,
I've enjoyed that a lot of these stores have actually closed on Thanksgiving and almost forced families to stay together instead of eating and then going and getting in line at Walmart to get the 68-inch TV that's $112. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've appreciated that. But let's talk about Thanksgiving traditions.
That was $115, and now it's $112, and they're fighting over it.
You saved $3.
Spent $4 in gas to get there.
I got the yellow tag, though. So let's talk about Thanksgiving traditions. What are some of your traditions?
Well, I mean, shocker, we eat turkey and ham.
You eat turkey and ham. I'm going to ask some questions in a second.
All
right. We're going to get into a controversial subject here in a second.
Okay.
Let's hear all the traditions.
So, I mean, for years we have, obviously it's a huge time for family. So I've both sides. For years it was when my grandparents were still alive, we spent time on that side of the family, my mom's side of the family. Then we'd spend time on my dad's side of the family. And then we'd always spend time specifically with my family and with my wife's family. And obviously people's passed on from those days now with grandparents and stuff getting older. And so now we basically spend time with our families, my parents and then my wife's parents. And then I would say the biggest tradition that we've had as far as long running tradition, at least for the guys, is when the next day rolls around, we're heading to either deer camp or somewhere with some turkey legs in our Ziplocs.
There you go.
And taking them to deer camp, man, and spending the whole rest of the Friday and the weekend.
Yeah. We've done something similar, except for not chasing whitetails. We've got, you know, I've got four boys, and some of them are smaller, and so it'd be hard for me to manage all of them hunting at the same time. And so we the last several years after Thanksgiving, same thing, girls go shop, and we have gone to some public land near us and gone squirrel hunting.
Oh yeah.
And that's fun for the kids because you don't have to be quite as quiet, you know, and they can run around, and it's been fun. So we've done that. Our biggest tradition is what we call Naked Thanksgiving.
Is this the right podcast for this? You made me nervous.
Put an E on this one. No, it's not bad. Several years ago, my sister-in-law got hot and she pulled her sweater off and she had on a nude colored
Lord.
Shirt, and everybody thought she was naked. So all the boys like ripped their, not me, but also, could you imagine me eating turkey without a shirt on?
Nope, I can't.
I'm glad. But all the boys ripped their shirt off and started running around yelling Naked Thanksgiving. And so every year they've called it Naked Thanksgiving. It's pretty funny, especially when your children have girlfriends and boyfriends.
And don't know what to expect with your family.
Yeah, we've invited them over, and the first thing that they hear is one of the kids yell, "It's time for Naked Thanksgiving!"
And then they're like out.
They're like, "What the heck, man?" It's pretty funny. But yeah, we do the same. We typically we have a big lunch and then snack around for dinner. Nothing crazy. Just hang out with the fam.
Yeah. Do you watch a little NFL football on Thanksgiving?
Not really. I don't love NFL.
I don't either, but it's just always, it's like the Lions and Cowboys, it seems like always play.
There is there's NCAA as well, college football on Thanksgiving afternoon too. So I prefer that over NFL.
Yeah.
I think most of the NFL players, I don't know them personally, but when I watch them on TV, I think they're babies. I can say that because they're not here. They'd probably beat me up.
Yeah, they'd beat you down.
I think the same thing about professional basketball players, too. Yeah. You know, like, they act
You're
like babies.
A very opinionated host.
That's a... Look, say what you want.
I do love Thanksgiving, man. We got a lot to be grateful for.
Yeah.
And being able to be a part of what we are a part of from an outdoor industry perspective, to me, is something I don't take for granted. I know you don't as well.
Yeah.
And I know our family at Texas Trophy Hunters, they're so grateful just to be a part of the outdoor space that we're in. And carrying on traditions, you know, it's really up to us to carry on whatever the traditions we have as family or friends or whatever. It's up to us to carry those on or make new ones. You know?
Let's talk about making new ones. At what kind of constitutes the reasoning to start a new tradition in your family?
Well, it's always, for me, I would say it's always related around. It's really not even about the event. It's more about just doing something with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, for girls, it may be shopping on Black Friday, or for the guys, it may be hunting or fishing or squirrel hunting or whatever. or shooting clays or whatever. It's just something that you're doing together as a family. Or
yeah.
That you're, for us, it's always something outdoors related, obviously, because that's what we love to do.
Yeah.
But I would think that's what constitutes whatever the event is for us, is just whatever we can do to spend, especially with our kids. We've got kids, you've got a whole tribe, but we've got
why
kids.
Why did you stutter there? Like,
I just always forget you got a tribe. but for us, it's whatever we can do to spend more time with our kids. And it's something that I feel like carries on even beyond when our kids get out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the same type things when they're coming back, bringing their wives and their kids.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing the same type things. And so it just, for me, revolves around spending time with the family.
Yeah.
And the event, although it may be similar for us year to year, it doesn't mean that we're not open to change too.
Yeah.
Whether that's a trip to wherever.
Yeah.
Dallas or
sure.
to Missouri or Branson or yeah. something, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it just basically comes down to spending time with the people we care about.
Yeah. I want to talk about the tradition of hunting in a second. And just, I know that you've been hunting for a long time, and most people, I would say people know, but if people don't know, you're the host of a outdoor television show called Strut and Buck. So for a lot of years, you've been all over the place hunting. And so yeah. I want to talk about the tradition of hunting with your family and things that people can do to help instill those traditions in other people,
yeah.
even other adults that
yeah.
have never been in it. But before we get to that, I want to talk about something controversial about Thanksgiving.
Other than naked Thanksgiving.
That's not controversial.
It could be.
I mean, it could be.
I probably blushed when you said that a while ago.
It could be, but anyway. So, this has got to be 100% honest, off
okay.
the cuff. Like, you have no idea where I'm going with
this. I don't know.
All right. Ham or turkey?
Dark meat.
So you like duck?
I like that dark meat, boy.
Okay. Well, there's... I don't
honestly,
know what to say.
If I got to choose one, I go ham.
I agree.
I love ham, and I love leftover ham the next day. So I'll take
on a roll
or bread. I'll take the next day and melt cheese on it. Make me a warm, not ham out of the grocery store.
Hot
as far
ham
as
ham and cheese.
Mm.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, that's what I'm talking
and
about.
And if you can do that and then go kill a big buck, oh boy, that ought to be everybody's tradition.
So on your ham and cheese roll or bread, do you put mustard on it?
Mayonnaise.
You do mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. I could see that being good.
It is.
All right. So
but some people don't like mayo at all.
I know. They would rather have a Miracle
out.
Whip. What the heck?
Like, for me, it's not good with
yeah.
my wife, because when she sees mayo at the side of my lip on my beard, it's just a bad visual, and she's like, "You're a nasty human." But I'm like, "Baby, this is so good."
That's funny. So you prefer ham?
Yep.
All right. So mashed potatoes or sweet potatoes?
Ooh, that's tough, because I love them both.
Yeah. So my theory on it is eat them both, because the sweet potatoes are like dessert.
Yeah. You're right.
Butter and sugar.
I agree.
You know?
Yep.
So you got to pick one, though.
I would probably say day in and day out, mashed potatoes.
No, we're not talking day in and day out, son. We're talking Thanksgiving.
I know, but I would say if I've got the option, I'm going to go with that first, because the other is sweet and it's more like a dessert.
Yeah.
I may come back and eat that and add a little cinnamon.
On top of what's already there. Okay.
Brown sugar or something. I do like food.
All right.
You keep your mind out of the gutter.
My mind ain't in no gutter.
I felt like you were leaning off the chair going south.
No, sir. All right. So rolls or cornbread?
Ooh. I would go rolls.
I agree with rolls.
Yeah.
With some spicy ranch. Have you ever dipped a roll in spicy ranch?
I'm sure I have, but it's definitely not
level.
A tradition, though.
No, I mean, it's a whole nother level, though. You should try it.
Okay.
All right. Green beans or corn?
Both.
That's
but
not.
I'll pick. We usually have both, but I'll go green
bean.
Green beans. I'll go green beans with some brown sugar.
That's hilarious. Okay, so we do like a creamy corn or a corn casserole that's got, it's like corn with cornbread mixed together.
Yeah.
So if you had those two options, which one would you choose?
What were my options again?
Creamy corn or corn casserole?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. I would go creamy corn.
Just, the boy likes dark meat, brown sugar, and creamy corn.
And did you say brown sugar?
And brown sugar on his creamy corn.
On top
corn.
Of brown sugar.
All right, let's go to dessert. What's your favorite? All right, so it would be cobbler or pie. We'll keep it broad.
I would, for Thanksgiving, I would go cobbler. Pie's pretty.
A la mode or no?
A la what?
With ice cream or not? He said, "With what?
You getting all tricky on me."
Not only am I a mechanic, I'm a chef too.
I would definitely say a la mode.
That's funny.
Yeah, I like ice cream for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. That's hilarious. All right, so that's enough of that. That's pretty funny though. I guarantee you, when people listen to this, they're going to ask the person that they're sitting next to some of these same questions.
Let's ask and answer for two of our special friends.
Okay.
For Christina and Lauren, what would you say their go-to is for Thanksgiving, as far as a main course?
I don't know.
I asked, so you got to answer.
I would say, I don't know. I've never eaten Thanksgiving dinner with them, so this is purely a guess.
Okay.
I'm going to say they both like ham.
I don't know what they would like. I'm going to say dressing's a safe bet, though.
Dressing.
With a little gravy.
Oh, yeah. Dressing with gravy. Probably green bean casserole. I'm going to guess that they would pick green bean casserole, rolls instead of cornbread, and sweet tea.
You're going to get an email on this one saying we were completely wrong.
Well, if we're wrong, we're just going to have to bring them on the show and ask them to clarify what their preference.
Because the world would probably like to know.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. Everybody eats something different. Like at Christmas time, for a lot of years, we did the same meal that we did for Thanksgiving. I was like, man, forget that. Let's do prime rib.
Yeah, change it up.
And it was fun, you know. So we've done that every year for the last few years. Honestly, I don't think we have to have ham and turkey at Thanksgiving, right?
Right.
One year, I had Chinese food.
Really?
Yes, because it was the only place open when I was traveling. It was a Chinese restaurant. So
much for tradition.
Yeah, but all right. Anyway, that's enough of that. That was kind of fun, though. I like those.
I like food.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah.
You talked all about. It sounds like you like sugar, too.
I guess I do more than I realized.
Yeah.
I do like it.
That's funny. So back to the topic of hunting and the tradition of hunting. Like I said earlier, you've been hunted with your family since you were young.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of those stories. And then 16 or 17 years ago, you and some friends had decided to start a TV show.
Yeah, it was a great idea.
Didn't know where it would go, what would happen with it. And, you know, I've known you for a long time. And then just, you know, probably in the last 6 years or so, been a lot closer to you and your family. And
yeah.
So I've gotten to see how you've included your boy Gavin in the tradition of hunting. And then your daughter also has started to pick up a love for that. And so, you know, on this Thanksgiving weekend, you know, in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, it's a time where we often look at what we did through the year and think about what we're going to do better next year. At least I do. And so I thought, you know, let's talk about the tradition of hunting, because we want this to stay alive forever, you know.
Yeah.
And I do for my kids. I want them to pass that on to their children. And so just continuing down the line. And so maybe if we can talk through some of those things from your perspective of doing that with your children, and then how can people bring other people into this tradition?
Yeah.
So walk us through some of that.
So for me, it started with obviously my dad, and at a young age, we grew up in hunting South Arkansas, which I wouldn't recommend, but a lot of deer, but you're not going to see many antlers down there. A lot of pine thickets. But anyway, point being, I grew up in an actual deer camp with my dad of probably 15 guys, sleeping in army tents and old, you know, 55-gallon drums made to stoves.
Yeah.
And sleeping on cots. And then we eventually graduated to a pop-up camper. And then eventually, years later, had like a fifth wheeler or a little camper or something like that. And so just being around a deer camp environment for me was something that I'll never forget. And the experiences that I had down there of interacting with deer and small deer, but they were deer.
Yeah. But before you go any further, I just kind of want to jump in and try to prove your point that you'll never forget that. Can you share a story from your childhood of hunting that kind of you'll never forget about it? You know, like that really solidifies this is when it started for me.
Sig Sauer over the years has become one of the most renowned firearms manufacturers in the world. A company born in Europe, but perfected right here in America. Here at Texas Trophy Hunters, when it comes to choosing a firearm, or even ammunition for that matter, Sig is an easy choice. Sig has something for everyone. Whether you need a pistol, a rifle, a suppressor, or even optics, they've got you covered. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a strong chance you're a hunter. And if that's the case, you absolutely want to check out what Sig has to offer when it comes to rangefinders. Nothing on the market today comes close to the ranging speed, distance reached, and extreme accuracy of Sig rangefinders. To learn more, visit SigSauer.com.
Well, there's so many. I don't know if there's one specific story that jumps out other than, again, for me, that experience goes back to people. I can remember the majority of people that were in camp with me, older gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
There would be, like I said, there'd be anywhere, depending on what year it was, 12 to 15 of us cranking up four-wheelers every morning at 5 o'clock or 4:35, heading to the woods and seeing the fog come out of the smoke coming out of the back of the four-wheelers, and everybody's going to their locations, you know, to mm-hmm. hunt. And then sitting there in the mornings and hearing gunshots going off, knowing it was one of our guys
right.
that had shot something. And so just the anticipation, one, of hoping I got to have a shot, no matter if it was a doe or a little, back then you could shoot whatever, you know,
yeah.
brown it's down mentality is what it used to be.
Yeah.
But hearing those gunshots and then the anticipation of hoping you got a gunshot, but then also the anticipation of getting back to camp to yeah. seeing what was brought back to camp.
Yeah, hearing the story of the hunt,
yeah.
all that stuff.
And I think one of the biggest things, so it was a big family deal for us. So my grandparents would be at camp, all the wives would be at camp, my mom would be at camp, and the other kids that I was hunting with. And when we'd get back at 10 o'clock in the morning, that old army tent had, dude, you could smell it coming down the dirt road. Breakfast was ready when
That's
we got
cool.
back. Biscuits and gravy and eggs and bacon. And that stands out to me as much as even shooting deer.
Yeah.
And then being around the campfire at night and having deer hanging off the skinning pole in the back, you know.
Yeah.
And guys sharpening knives and the old timers telling those stories.
Right.
It was really simple mm-hmm. life, so to speak. It was
yeah.
like a time we got away from everyday routine. For
yeah.
us, it was school. For the parents, it was their jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
And we got to just hang around and get away from everyday life and experience what hunting's really all about. And for me, what it's all about is it's really not – the deer is not the climax of the event.
It's the whole experience.
It's the experience, the
yeah.
relationships with the people you care about, that friends and family. And so for me, that's what runs deeper than even shooting a deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I love shooting deer, obviously, but it's about the stories that are associated with
right.
the deer. It's like you've been to the house when you look at the deer that are on the wall. Every deer has a story,
yeah,
of something crazy that happened.
Yeah.
It was always more than just I didn't just
yeah.
shoot a deer and it was over.
Yeah,
there was something.
Yeah, you remember every detail,
every
who
detail
you're with,
prior,
what happened.
Yeah, who was with, what happened prior to the hunt, what
yeah.
happened during it, after.
Yeah.
The exact stand we were in and the exact state. You just remember all that.
Yeah.
And so the deer is obviously a part of that. But I think the bigger picture there is the family and friends that you were with and those memories that you have are what people really want to be a part of.
Yeah. I would say that there's something special about deer camp. When you're young and when you're old. I didn't have the same story. I didn't hunt when I was young. I actually started hunting with my father-in-law the year before I got married.
Yeah.
And it was at deer camp. And it was that same experience, you know, like you smell the food cooking when you're coming
mm-hmm.
in from the deer stand, all of that stuff, you know, meeting the guys at the other camp down the road, all that was very impactful for me my first year. And so when I had kids, I wanted them to go experience that. And fortunately, we had moved back home. When most of my boys were younger, so we moved close to Aaron's parents, and so he took us to deer camp, and those moments are so impactful on the younger
yeah.
generation of children, you know, and even teenagers for that matter. But my kids, they loved that breakfast, you know,
yeah.
coming out of the stand, being freezing cold, coming out, smelling the breakfast. In fact, they still call a fried egg a deer camp egg. They don't call it a fried egg. It's a deer camp egg because that's
yeah.
how they cooked them at deer camp. They weren't scrambled.
That's funny.
It's a deer camp egg.
You yeah.
know, even not at when we're not at deer camp, that's what they call it. And so the experience is what helps provide that tradition for a long lasting experience, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's different for everybody. That was just what I grew up in. What my son and daughter's growing up in is completely different, a different tradition than what I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that one's better than the other, but my kids have never known anything other than hunting is related to outdoor television. So it's a total different viewpoint than what I grew up with. You know, back in the day, if we shot a 120-inch deer in South Arkansas, it was a monster.
Right.
You know, and now my daughter passes, well, she ain't passing 120s yet, but she's passed a lot of deer that I would have probably shot when I was young.
Yeah.
Just because she has a different perspective
than
what I had growing up. And she's has the opportunity now to be in front of better quality deer as well, mm-hmm. you know, than what I grew up in. And so I think everybody, and even people that are listening to the podcast, everybody has a different perspective on how they were introduced to hunting, for one, but traditions that are either involved with hunting or even beyond hunting, different traditions. We all have but I think the common denominator to all that is the traditions are typically associated with people you care about the most.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what to me, the most important part of all this conversation is be sure and take time, you know, and Thanksgiving's obviously a great time and we should always be grateful and thankful. And I feel like we are.
Yeah.
But obviously around Thanksgiving, it's a time that you can kind of check out from work for a little bit.
Naturally you are and naturally inclined to
be reminded of how grateful it is to, or how grateful we are to be a part of
this culture,
a culture that allows us to hunt and
enjoy family
and fish and be with family and
absolutely
and eat brown sugar.
We're back to the food again. So Heath, let's talk a little bit about some tips, some things that you would encourage people with that you've learned from your upbringing and then raising your kids and getting, seeing them fall in love with the outdoor tradition, the hunting tradition. What are some things that you would recommend people to do?
I mean, I think one of the things for me is, and everybody's schedules are different, but one of the things that there is a sacrifice to in inviting people into this hunting culture,
mm-hmm.
meaning at some point you got to put the gun down or the bow down and take somebody, you know, mm-hmm. and I think for some people that's challenging depending on, and everybody's got legitimate excuses depending on if you're a weekend warrior and that's the only time you can go, you want to go, you know, but at some point I think it's our duty as sportsmen to put down the weapon and take somebody that's never been.
Yeah.
And the fun thing about it is it's actually, for me now, it's almost a selfish act because I get more excitement and enjoyment and I'm a heck of a lot more nervous because we obviously film everything.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm filming somebody that's never hunted or my kids, for sure, because you want them to succeed so bad.
Right.
I'm a whole nother level of nervous before they squeeze a trigger or let an arrow fly than I am personally, you know. We got to experience it this year. My son's girlfriend had never been hunting and wanted to go, and so Gavin, I'm getting to finally start see it trickle down mm-hmm. through my son and seeing his enjoyment out of wanting to take people. So he's taking his best friend last year. I happened to be with him to kill his first deer, and then he took his girlfriend this year to kill her first deer with a crossbow. And you can try explaining the first hunt to people, but it never calculates until they get to experience it.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about buck fever or doe fever. It don't matter. If you're about to squeeze a trigger if you're about to squeeze the trigger on something, there's something that comes over you that you can't explain other than your heart's going to be pounding out of your chest. And so I got to experience this year with Gavin taking his girlfriend, her getting a shot at her first doe, and they got the doe.
Yeah.
But she almost couldn't even squeeze the trigger because she was so distraught.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so cool to experience that with people. Jaden was the same way when he shot his first buck with a bow.
Yeah.
He shot it and he's pretty high, like loud, and everybody wants to talk to him. He wants to talk to everybody. He, after that, he was fairly calm and I was like, yeah, come on, man, let's go. You know, I was so pumped. He's like, Dad, you didn't even shoot it. I was like, he's like, calm down. I was like, I can't touch your person, you know.
And
it's seeing people experience what we love,
yeah,
with the outdoor hunting tradition, and there's something special about
absolutely,
it. Absolutely,
you know, cool. It's so fun to see. So I think I don't know if it's a tip, but it's just, to me, it's common sense. At some point, if it's our job, I feel like to introduce, we ought to be at least introducing four or five people within a 10-year span. I'm just throwing random numbers out, but.
Because, I think that's fair, because and maybe it's less of a tip and more of a challenge for people who are part of the Trophy Hunters family and people who will be a part of it, is we want to continue to grow the outdoor hunting tradition in space. And so do what he's talking about. Take somebody. Let them experience it with you.
The greatest form of marketing I've always felt like is word of mouth. The way we translate word of mouth advertising in today's culture is a little bit different than it used to be. But if you take four or five different people over the course of 5 or 10 years that get to experience what we've experienced and that first sensation of getting to take your first deer or whatever, they're going to tell people about it, because you can't help but tell people about exciting things that have happened in your life, or the first experience of your first deer or whatever. And so to me, that's how we continue to grow our hunters as far as a population, and it all benefits hunting, and as far as the bigger picture down the road with license sales and tags and conservation, everything else that follows getting into hunting. But it's got to start somewhere, and it's got to be us as hunters taking the reins and saying, you know what, I'm not taking a weapon today, I'm taking somebody to get to experience. And and for some people that's challenging, because that may mean taking them to your property, giving up a deer, giving up a turkey.
What happens if the deer you want to shoot walks out?
You're gonna tell a kid, no, you can't shoot my target buck.
I think it kind of, this is a good segue back to food, but we'll go keep in the conversation. But Mike Reber was at Hunter's Extravaganza, and he did seminars at two of them. He wasn't able to be at the middle one in Dallas this year, but he did seminars on how to prepare wild game. And one of the questions that we got from one of the attendees at the extravaganza was, how do you prepare wild game or deer meat, is what the actual question was. How do you prepare deer meat for someone who doesn't like deer meat and get them to like it? And he kind of went the same direction as you're talking about here with the hunt, only with cooking. He's like, why would you give somebody who's never had wild game or says they don't like it the worst piece of the meat? So you got to be a little less selfish and cut up the backstrap. And let them eat the best part of the deer. So that they can learn to enjoy why we enjoy it, you know, and then let them branch out from there. You know, I think by nature, people are pretty selfish. Wouldn't you agree?
We say we're not, but at the end of the day, like, I think everybody's okay with saying, if I'm going to sacrifice and put my gun down for a day and take somebody, most normal humans would be willing to do that. But when you take it to the next level and you say, if my target buck walks out, and then you got to give up, they're like, hold on a second. Because I do know people that would not allow that. You know? And so I think that's when I say sacrifice, it's much more than just saying I'm going to skip a hunt to take somebody, but it goes to the next level. Are you going to give them an opportunity? One, if it's either on your land or land you have access to, are you going to allow them to shoot something that maybe you were hoping you got yourself? And then do you take it another step farther and let them be a part of the process of truly harvesting the deer or the wild game, whatever it is, and being a part of going in the field, pulling it out, taking the guts out, everything we've got to do as hunters and preparing the meat. And the old saying, we get to enjoy it twice, once on the harvest and second at the plate, you know, but let them truly be a part of that whole experience from start to finish. Because I can promise the first time they do that, they're going to have a deeper appreciation for the meat they harvested versus just going and buying something at the grocery
100%.
store.
I mean, my kids are the same way. Jet killed his first buck this year, and I've never seen him want to do what he did, you know. Like, from the we a lot of times we process most of our meat ourselves at the house, and he was like, I got to do this, and set up at the table at night. I mean, took every piece of silver skin he could get off, you know, like it was very, very intense. And then when dad, when are we going to eat it? You know, like, there was like a passion or like there was something different about that particular deer because he had taken the time to hunt it, harvest it, bring it home in the coolers, take care of the meat, you know?
Yeah.
And
prepping it, cleaning it, and sealing it up, and all that process. It's a family event for us.
Yeah.
Unless we're out of state. But if we harvest a deer and come home, I'm the same way. I typically cut all my own meat up. And then when we come around the bar at night, we've got our vac seals out and we're cleaning, and my daughter's helping vac seal meat, and we're all putting it in the freezer and labeling it and where it was from, what the harvest date, all that, on writing it with a Sharpie, you know?
Yeah.
And again, that's part of, for me, hunting tradition as well, because it's again, it goes back to including people into that process. And there's just, whether it really does taste better or not, you feel like it does because you were a part of it from start to finish.
So what about cooking deer meat on Thanksgiving?
I like where you're going.
I like the idea.
We'll try that next year.
So, okay, this is a little bit more of a challenging question, I think. So there are a lot of people that don't hunt and some that don't believe that we should hunt.
Yeah.
So we know that we hunt for purpose. You know, it's not just to go out and slay animals and be savages or anything like that. You know, we hunt because we enjoy the sport, we enjoy the food, we enjoy the experience, all of that kind of stuff. And so I guess what I want to ask is, how do we help people who are on the complete opposite side of the fence as us, you know, on this tradition and this lifestyle of hunting and the experience that goes around it? How do we help people on the other side of the spectrum recognize the value in what we do?
Yeah, it's definitely an ongoing battle. I think it's probably not going away anytime soon. But to me, it comes down to, one, the approach and how you communicate what we do. Giving people an understanding and having, we call it breaking bread, but if you can get in, for me, at least when I've had the opportunity, I actually went through this with my daughter. Because you know my daughter, she is a diehard animal lover.
Right.
And even the thought of taking an animal's life was a big deal to her.
Yeah.
And this was only a few years ago.
Yeah,
and it's still a big deal to her. It's still hard for her to squeeze the trigger, but she finally has an understanding that we take care of more animals than we take off of a property.
Right.
But it didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
And so, and then even outside of family, when the conversations I've had, if you can, it's like anything, it's like marriage. You can say anything you want to say to your wife as long as you say it the right way.
My wife always says tone matters.
Tone matters. But tone matters in how we explain to people what we're doing too. If we come off as brash and we're right and you're wrong and I don't really care what you say, we're right regardless, people's not going to listen to that mess.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we have to approach it from a understanding their side of the picture and allowing them to, and then obviously in return, them allowing us to share why we do what we do.
Yeah.
I don't have those conversations as much as I probably should, but when I do have them, the first thing I do is look at what kind of shoes they're wearing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because if they're wearing leather shoes and they're mad at me for taking an animal, or if they got a McDonald's burger in their hand, you're probably wasting your time having the conversation. But I'm kind of joking, but in the same manner, I think when you can give people an understanding of what we do, and most people, unless they are legit vegans, then there are some out there, and that's their opinion. You know, there's nothing wrong with that if that's what they do. I don't judge them if it's more meat for us, the way I look at it. I'm joking, but I think it comes down to just how you present the conversation, and not present it from a standpoint of I'm right, you're wrong, no matter what you say, but have an understanding of. I have great respect for people that if that's truly what they believe and they're not wearing leather shoes and they ain't eating hamburger and they really believe it's not right, then that's their deal. You know, doesn't mean it's going to change the way I believe, but I am open to hearing their side of their belief. You know, I mean, that whole deal goes down a whole laundry list of things you could have from religion and faith to eating meat or not eating meat. Yeah. You know what I mean? People that just want to argue,
they're just going to argue no matter what.
You're probably wasting your time. But I do think you can at least have open the opportunity if you present your side the right way and not do it from a bullish.
Yeah. Years ago, there was some topics that some of my family members were arguing about on social media. And I told some of my people, I was like, look, don't post on there because you can tell they just want to argue, you know? They don't want to hear any other side of any other story, right?
Yeah.
And so you got to choose your battles, I think is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Know your battles. You know if somebody's going to listen to your reasoning,
yeah,
and be okay with it. And you, yeah, know if somebody's just trying to pick a battle and make you mad.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, I agree. And that's why I go back to, again, if it's a total stranger, maybe it's a little more difficult. But if you can, if these kind of conversations are not meant for Facebook and Instagram,
yeah,
and social media, just to stir up controversy, you know, mm-hmm, it may get engagement and traffic,
mm-hmm,
but you're probably not going to win a battle, I don't feel like, most of the time, from just making posts on social media outlets.
Yeah.
But if you can get into a place where you can break bread with people and sit down, yeah, and have a meal and have legitimate conversations, there's a good chance that they're at least going to be open to what you have to say and have a better understanding of why we do what we, mm-hmm, do. When they understand how much money we're putting back into our efforts to take care of animals, and we're taking care of a lot more animals than we are removing, mm-hmm, from the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a proven fact. Anything that's protected and that is hunted thrives,
mm-hmm,
you know? I mean, across the globe, if there's a value to it, then people are willing, yeah, they want to be a part of it, but it also, that's why the whitetail thrives. I mean, we put so much into it. I mean, it literally, we may be at another level than, not from, as far as better than other people, but we do, our whole life revolves around,
yeah,
whitetails, yeah, at some level.
Yeah, we talk about it every day.
I mean,
day.
It's every single day, yeah, of our life, whether we're in the woods or we're in the office, even to down to our jobs, that's what we do, is work with products and create products, and everything we do revolves around the hunting industry. And so we probably have a little skewed view of it,
mm-hmm,
compared to just the average person that's not in the industry, so to speak. And that doesn't make us right or wrong, but I do think when people have a better understanding of why we are like we are, and that we are putting way more into this than we're taking out of it, then it just has people, they have a little bit more of an open mindset,
yeah,
to why we do what we do.
Yeah. I would say getting people involved in hunting and the outdoor lifestyle, the whole tradition of what we do, is kind of like hunting in itself.
Yeah.
It takes perseverance, it takes dedication, and it takes time.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to have all three of those things when you're raising your kids. Every time you go out, that's an opportunity for them to experience something new that they'll love for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
It's a new story for them to tell to somebody else. If you're bringing somebody who's grown and not been part of the outdoors and a little resilient to it.
Yeah.
Time, relationship, real conversation, not hateful, like,
yeah,
you just said.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, bringing people into this is kind of like hunting. Like I said, you know,
yeah,
it takes all of those things for both of them.
Yeah. So, and being intentional about it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's cool. Man, this has been a fun conversation, just talking about all the food that you enjoyed last
time. That takes perseverance to get through Thanksgiving meals and desserts.
Can I ask you how many meals you ate on Thanksgiving?
Well, there's usually at least three. There's a prep meal before lunch, kind of a little appetizer type deal. Then there's the feast.
Yeah.
And then actually there's probably four. Then there's dessert. And then there's the follow-up late at night with the leftovers. I always go back for leftovers.
I love it. Yeah. So I don't do the ham and the roll the next day. I do it that night.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I do it that night. That's what I
get. Get you a bunch of good bread before you lay down and go to bed.
Yeah. That way you sleep really good. No, seriously, from all of us at Texas Trophy Hunters and from us, Heath and I, at the Voice of, yeah, Texas Hunting Podcast, we hope you had a great Thanksgiving and look forward to Christmas coming up and spending more time with our family. And then obviously the new year. So from us, like I said, happy Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And
happy holidays, people.
There you go. Yep.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you're enjoying what you're hearing on the Voice of Texas Hunting Podcast, we would love for you to do us a favor. Jump on your podcast app and give us a review. Rate the podcast and share it with a friend. Not only that, if you're not already a member, we would love for you to visit ttha.com and sign up for a 1, 3, or 5-year membership. As a member, you'll get some great products, exclusive member discounts, and a ton of resources to help